You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie's.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. Whatever it is that you're doing, thank you for bringing us along. We're the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King, on a long road trip in Denver now, getting ready for the Celtics to wrap this up. Gutting this out. Jay, you are on fumes. Appreciate you.
That's just what I do, man.
Yeah.
I give it my all. I'm here.
100% all of the
heart,
time.
All grit. And AKA I'm sitting on a chair talking about basketball.
Yeah. It's you're a hero, true hero. So coming up today, this is our first chance to talk about the big game against the Warriors, and that, of course, has now suddenly inspired a whole lot of trade discussion on Twitter. We'll get to that. And I just saw Terry Rozier tweet something funny, so I'm going to spring that on Jay. I'm sure he's going to go search for it now. But because Terry Rozier, he's a funny guy. And all of this hopefully inspires you to subscribe to the show if you're not already subscribing. If you have not, please search for us wherever you get your shows. We are everywhere, even on Spotify. If you use Spotify for all your music, use it for your podcast. We are here. The entire Locked On Podcast Network is there. If you are a subscriber, 5 stars, please share the podcast. Spread the word. Let them know they should be listening to us, especially when we're talking about a big, like this almost felt like a win. That game against the Golden State Warriors Saturday night was awesome. And we came into the night thinking like, oh boy, this could be bad. And the Celtics, they've just always played the Warriors well under Brad Stevens. And that game was everything ABC and ESPN wanted in a Saturday night game. That was a wonderful game for all but the point where they lost. But after the game, Jay, you were talking to people. The entire locker room, Brad Stevens, everybody seemed encouraged because the team played well, and I would say they played better in this game that they lost than in a lot of the games that they've won this year.
Yeah, and especially recently with the 4 straight losses and kind of the offensive slump that they've had, it was nice for them to show that they can still compete with the best. Obviously, it's not a huge surprise. They're still number one in the East. Like, they're a very competitive team. They're really good. But I thought the biggest takeaway, besides the Kyrie-Steph duel, and the most positive takeaway from a Celtics perspective, is that their defense has held up against all the best offenses this season. You know, they really, really, really locked down the Warriors the first time the two teams met. And then the Warriors needed an absolutely vintage Stephen Curry performance. He was just magical to have a normal offensive night. And it was subpar by their standards. It was pretty normal for most team standards. So just a great defensive performance by the Celtics, I thought, which seems weird because Stephen Curry had 49 points. and you know, the Celtics gave up 109 points, but they're the Warriors. And Stephen Curry is Stephen Curry, a 2-time MVP. He is going to do shit like that sometimes. But the Celtics, their defense has been great against the best offenses, whether it's Cleveland or Houston or Golden State twice now, or Minnesota, who they really clamped. This Celtics defense is a special unit, and it's been ranked at the top of the rankings for a long time now, and it holds up. It sustains. It's capable of competing against the top level of offense and limiting some of what the top level of offense can do. And that's a big deal. And I think that defense will give the Celtics a chance in almost any big game, almost any series. So it's really impressive how well the Celtics have defended all year, but especially I think the fact that they've done it against all the greatest teams.
I will take a moment here to just remind people that today's show is brought to you by our friend Jason Manganiello, who was probably watching this game last night because he's a huge C's fan. He's a listener of this podcast, and he is one of the best real estate agents in the business in Massachusetts, and he donates to his community, and he's going to help you buy and sell your house. More on that in a minute, but I will say I agree with the entire concept of the Celtics defense. Look, Steph Curry is not going to do what he did. And of course you can turn around and say, well, Kyrie Irving's not going to do what he did either. And so that all kind of evens out, but Curry just caught fire, and you know, he shot 8 of 13 from three, which is ridiculous, but they held Kevin Durant. I mean, 20 points for Kevin Durant on 39% shooting is pretty good. It's pretty good. Klay Thompson, who can kill teams, had 7 points, and he made a nice impact defensively. Thompson did, because that's the type of player he is. But offensively, he's the guy that can kill you when you're concentrating too much on Curry and Durant. And no one else on the team really did a ton. Draymond Green had 15 points, but you know, a few free throws kind of bumped that up. No one on the bench did anything significant. The Celtics did a generally good job, minus Curry just becoming, you know, supernova. So yeah, the defense was good and would be better if Marcus Smart were available. I guess some of the trade-off is that some of the shots that he would take, but it's either Marcus Smart shots or Terry Rozier or Shane Larkin shots. I guess it's all kind of the same in the end. I thought the Celtics shorthanded, especially shorthanded, were impressive. So I agree. The defense was probably the big story. I think Al Horford does not get enough credit. I heard somebody on Twitter today say that he's regressing, which is ridiculous. He had, not only did he have 15 and 13, which is an amazing stat line in and of itself, he was defending like crazy. He was blocking jump shots in the mid range. He was a huge part when you talk about the Celtics defense. Al Horford was at the center of a lot of that.
Yeah, definitely. And before we get too deep into talking about this game, we got to talk about Kyrie versus Steph.
Yeah.
Because they put on an absolute clinic, absolute display. There aren't many guys that are capable of even one time putting on a shot-making display like those guys put on. Considering the level of defense, considering the level of competition, considering how important all those shots were from both of those guys, it was silly, silly, silly what they did. Curry had 49 points on 24 shots. Kyrie had 37 points on 18 shots. It was some of the most efficient, outrageous shot making you'll ever see. Almost all the shots were tough. Even sometimes, like the Celtics, they screwed up a couple switches on Curry. There was one time when Jaylen Brown looked like he was supposed to switch out and kind of laid back instead, and Curry popped a three in his face, and Brad Stevens was exasperated on the sidelines, throwing up his arms. But even then, like, to have a quick release off the dribble, for a normal human, that's a tough shot. Curry was ridiculous. Kyrie was ridiculous. I'm trying to think of other guys capable of having a shot-making performance like that on one given night. And I'm thinking like Dame Lillard, CJ McCollum, Lou Williams. I'm probably being disrespectful to a whole bunch of other guys.
Of guys that can just go off and make shots like these guys?
Like the level of difficulty that they were – of the shots that they were creating – and the shots that they were making and the efficiency that they did it with, it was really just unbelievable.
Harden,
Yeah, Harden. You know, of course.
Westbrook when he's going.
No, never.
Hold on. Westbrook when he gets hot.
Never not, with that efficiency.
No, not on a regular basis. But
no, never.
Westbrook when he gets hot, when he has one of those hot nights, he can do it.
Never.
Okay, fine.
We got beef over the Russell Westbrook thing.
I'm not saying he's not at that same level on a he's not a risk to do it on any given night, but every once in a while he'll go nuts like that. He will.
And Isaiah's up there.
Isaiah can do it. Oh, yeah, of course. But, I think
there aren't many guys up, and the way they did it, the shot from Kyrie where he was isolated against Curry on the left side, and then a double came, and he did like a spin, like fake one way, go the other all at the same time. Just some spellbinding stuff from those guys.
Yeah.
It was fun to be in the building to watch those guys do what they did yesterday. It was some special offense. Okay, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my favorite Kyrie shot was it might have gotten lost in this whole thing, but it just goes to show how creative he can be. Driving down the lane, I forget at what point in the game it was, but it was late. Driving down the lane, going down the left side, and just a lot of traffic. And he doesn't Euro step necessarily, but he slows down his steps and takes a step to the left and fires one up with his left hand off the glass, which was silly. In just the audacity to take that shot where he was, but the creativity to say, okay, I need to get this far out of the way and I need to shoot it with my left so it doesn't get blocked. That's the type of stuff that just Kyrie is just mind-blowing in his ability to adjust as he's creating. And so many guys drive and just say, I'm in, I'm driving, and I'm just going to throw this up and let's see. Kyrie drives and he's like calculating as he's driving. It's like everything is like going half speed for him. And he's got like all that, you know, the movie style data going through his eyes. And he's like, oh, okay, I got to do this, I got to do that. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That lefty finish you were talking about was silly. The finish he had where he attacked Draymond, who is the reigning defensive player of the year, and finished with a lefty shot past him. Just some stupid shot making from those two guys. And both teams needed it because the defenses were so elite that you just need great players to break the great defense. You're not always going to get easy shots. Very rarely are you going to get easy shots. On a totally different note, how concerned are you with Jason Tatum's kind of slump that he's had lately?
A little concerned because I'm not that concerned. I think he's, you know, proverbially hit that wall. I think he's struggling right now to kind of, you know, it's hard to keep the consistency that he's been keeping up. He's got the kid, which is, I'm sure, keeping him up. And I think he's tired. I just think he's struggling a little bit with
blaming the kid.
It's not the kid's fault necessarily.
I think you just said it was the kid's fault.
Well, the kid is the reason, but it's Jason's fault for having the kid, I suppose. And we're going to get technical on this. The kid doesn't know what he's doing. You know? So, yeah, I think the Tatum tot has robbed him of his sleep a little bit. And
fatherhood is a blessing, guys, from what I hear.
Of course.
I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, sure. I'm all for it. All for it. Although I don't have kids, and I'm so happy that I don't. But, yeah, if you want to do it, go for it. That's great. But just know that if you have a kid, you're not going to sleep very well. And when you're 19 and you're still learning the NBA and you're getting through, this is his first chance to go through the January doldrums. He's played more basketball now than he's ever done in a season. So there's an adjustment period. And if you're not sleeping, and that has an impact. And on top of it, I do think that teams are aware of him more now. They have sat there and gotten burned for half a season and said, all right, we got to pay attention to this Tatum kid now because he's really damn good. And when we rotate, we can't pay too much attention to Kyrie and Al Horford. We got to defend them as well as we can, but you can't leave Tatum to defend that. You got to start leaving other guys. So I think that he's going to be defended a little bit differently. And it just all comes together to just give him some struggles. I think he'll be fine. He's getting another All-Star break. He'll be okay.
Yeah, I tend to think he's going to be okay too. I think this was just expected regression. And I don't know whether it's because he's tired. I don't know whether it's because he's not used to playing all the games. Whether the Tatum tot has really impacted him. But he was never going to shoot 51% from the arc forever. Nobody does. Right. Just nobody does. And it was remarkable that he did it for as long as he did and that he sustained that consistency. But he was always going to have a stretch like this where it got a little bumpy because nobody, like I said, nobody. Doesn't matter whether you're Kyle Korver or Steve Kerr or whoever else. Just nobody shoots that good a percentage from the three-point arc. And so it was bound to happen at some point. But it is definitely obvious that he's going through it right now.
Yeah.
And he's not what he was earlier in the season. He had some gross shots against Golden State. He just hasn't been the same lately.
I think you could see his confidence a little bit. There are a couple of shots that he might have taken earlier in the year that at the end of the game he passed up. So that's I think he's aware. He's very well aware of the problems that he's having, and I do think that it's affecting him. I do think his confidence is a little shaken, but he'll be okay. He'll be fine because that stuff that happened earlier, it can come back. And I'm not concerned, but yeah, you're right. This was always going to happen. Just like a few weeks ago, I think it was me and Sam on the show. We're talking about predicting out how many wins they're going to have. And at that point they were projected to have what, like 65 wins or some crazy number. And it's like, this team can't possibly have 65 wins. It's just, they're going to hit a skid somewhere. And now they did, they've lost 5 of 6. And that's, I mean, it's not okay, I guess, but it's okay. They're going to go through these stretches. Every team goes through stretches where they lose a few, except for maybe the Golden State Warriors, and you have to be historically great to avoid that. So everybody's going to struggle. Kyrie struggles. Al Horford struggles. Tatum struggles. The stars, the rookies, everybody. Brad Stevens might have a couple of games in a row where you're like, oh, Brad, what are you doing? And that's going to happen. You never know when somebody's going to have a bad day. The only people who don't have bad days are me and you on this podcast. That's it.
We are bad dayless.
Jason Manganiello does not have a bad day. Jason Manganiello has 15-plus years experience in the real estate business. He's part of the residential group, top-selling group in all of Massachusetts at William Ravis since 2009. He wants to help you buy or sell your house. So if you're in the Boston area, the greater Boston area, and you want to buy or sell a house, if you're just thinking about it, or if you know a friend who is thinking about it, contact Jason Manganiello. He's got a lot of resources at his disposal, and he will give you a personal touch with those resources backing him up. And the big thing with Jason, and this is so cool, is that he reinvests in the communities that he works in. 10% of his commission goes to a local nonprofit designated by the client. That's you. You can decide which local charity gets a benefit from you buying a house in your community, which is awesome. If, like I said, if you know of somebody who's trying to buy or sell a house, you can benefit too because he's sending people to Celtics games. Anybody who buys or sells a house with him gets a Celtics, if you're a Locked On Celtics listener, goes to a Celtics game, or referrer goes to a Celtics game as well. So contact Jason Manganiello, 617-877-5694, 617-877-5694, or email him, LockedOnJason. He will help you buy or sell a house or give you just that informational stuff. You just want to go through a market analysis. He will help you with that. Again, the number is 617-877-5694. LockedOnJason@gmail.com. Contact Jason. He's a Celtics fan. He's a Locked On Celtics listener, and he's going to help you buy or sell a house. All right. One of the side effects of this game is people are losing their minds.
Hold on. We got one more takeaway before we get to the people losing their minds.
Oh, okay.
The bench score. It's the lulls. The lulls where the Celtics just do stupid crap.
This is part of the whole same topic.
It's all part of the same topic. Let's wrap it into one topic. I like that.
You like that, huh?
See, that's why I let you lead the show.
Because now the Celtics got out there and they just barely lost to the Warriors. We know they're shorthanded and we know they struggle to score without Kyrie on the floor. And Brad Stevens, to his credit, manages the minutes very well. We've seen a few catastrophic injuries over the past few days. Roberson, Cousins, the Grizzlies lost Conley. But the Celtics and Brad Stevens manage the minutes well, so there's not a ton of fatigue. However, the problem is when those guys are on the bench, when Kyrie is on the bench especially, who scores? The Celtics, like you said, can't score. So now people are sitting there. They say, all right, we just barely lost to the Warriors in their place. We beat them at our place. We're this close. We're so close. It's time to start trading things for bench help. That's where I have a problem. Now, the Celtics do need bench help. So, Jay, I've been on Twitter all day saying there's no need to make a trade unless they decide they want to use the disabled player exception, which is definitely at their disposal. And somewhere in this trade market in the next couple of weeks, or the buyout market after that, maybe they can get some help off the bench. But
so essentially you'd be cool with a minor trade, but you don't want the Celtics using a lot of assets to look for a major upgrade.
Exactly what I'm saying. Do not trade draft picks. Do not trade unless they're trading. Unless they say, we're not going to re-sign Marcus Smart, or we need to get rid of Marcus Morris for whatever. But if they say, we're not going to re-sign Marcus Smart, so we're going to trade him and get somebody here that we can use, then I guess. But I don't see any indications from the Celtics that that's going to be a case. I think a minor deal with a disabled player exception, fine. But I'm not into giving up draft picks or even a player. I'm not into giving up Yabusele or Ojale or any of those guys, because those guys, you want to keep them around for a little bit and see if they can develop into helpful players.
Okay. Is there anybody out there that's not like a short-term rental, that's not a super minor piece, that would intrigue you? I saw Danger Cart throw out the Aaron Gordon possibility.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Magic will trade Aaron Gordon. But they're in a place as a franchise where they should probably consider anything.
No, there's nobody out there that is particularly intriguing. I mean, people are talking about Tyreke Evans. The Grizzlies are going to want something in return for Tyreke Evans. I mean, maybe if it's just the second round pick and you absorb him into the disabled player exception. I have to look at what he makes, if that's possible. But then, yeah. But
just a second-round pick for who?
Tyreke Evans.
Okay.
You know, but, like, that's basically, like, my limit. Like, a second-round pick, and let's see, what does Tyreke make? Yeah, he makes $3.2 million, so he easily can be absorbed into the disabled player exception if they wanted to. But he's playing really well. And Memphis should be trying to maximize his value. I don't think they're just going to sit there and take a second-round pick for him. They're going to want something. I've read that they want at least a late first-round pick, and I'm not willing to do that because he's probably going to take off. They're not going to pay him after this year. So why not keep that late first-round pick? On top of not giving up assets and not overreacting, they're going to need the guys that they draft with these picks to develop into something. Those are kind of important picks. The Celtics are right at that tax line. They're right at kissing that tax line next season. And if they can avoid paying the tax next season, that'd be huge, because that's one less year that they would be in that repeater territory. And if you can avoid being in that repeater territory for 3 years, then you don't get that added bump. So if you can push that off for one more year, that's big, because then you can get into paying that involves paying Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You can, those things are easier to do. So these late first round picks and the second round picks, you might need them to be kind of role players off the bench, like a Terry Rozier type that you get late in the first round. So I think
counterpoint.
Go ahead.
Counterpoint, two of the least expensive guys on their team, Daniel Tice and Shane Larkin, have both been better than anybody with the exception of Tatum the Celtics drafted. So that's not the only way to get cheap talent with picks. And I know Tice was maybe just good fortune. Obviously, the Celtics saw a lot in him and liked what they saw, and he's been really good. And Larkin hasn't been as good as Tice, I don't think, but he's swung some games, and he's been a solid contributor at the minimum. So draft picks aren't the only way to get that cheap talent. My question for you is, how good do they have to be for you to want them to go out and get additional talent to help them win this season? Like, what point do they need to reach for you to think, okay, it's time for them to go out and spend whatever they need to spend to get some bench help to solidify their run this season instead of focusing solely on the future?
Okay, I'm going to answer that by first asking you a question. How far do you think this Celtics team, without any additional help, can get?
I think finals would be a realistic chance. I don't know how realistic that is without seeing what happens with Cleveland over the next few months. But I certainly don't think the finals appearance is out of the question.
Okay. So using that, and I'll even take a step back and say, even if it's the conference finals, they do have Gordon Hayward rehabbing. And I know that Brad Stevens, you were there when he said, we don't anticipate having him back this season. But that's a very nice way to kind of push that off. He's not talking about the playoffs. He's talking about this season, this regular season, which they won't. They probably won't have him back in time for the end of the regular season. But then we know that the playoffs drag on, and that the conference finals won't be until May, and the NBA finals won't be until June. And April is the tail end of the widest window for recovery from that injury. So if his recovery goes well, nothing extraordinary, nothing, no setbacks, but just normal, he should be healthy as an athlete somewhere in that April area. So
what makes you say that?
Because the injury happened in November, and that 6-month window is right at the window where an injury like that is supposed to be healed. Like that's.
But an NBA doctor ruled that he's likely to miss through the end of the finals.
Right.
And I know a lot has happened since then, and I know it's you can speed up the recovery process.
Right.
But that still happened. And I know there's still a chance Gordon Hayward comes back, but I don't think it's automatic at all.
It may not be automatic, but like an NBA doctor can say it's, I don't know what the terminology is, it's very likely that he will miss through the end of the finals.
I think it's significantly more probable than not, or something right. like that.
Whatever it is. Yeah, because his
like goddamn Ed Wells reporter.
Right.
Some shit.
Whatever it is, but you know, because his ankle was, you know, facing 9 o'clock, it was a very horrific injury, and you have to take into account it's whatever, it was like a 4 to 6 month recovery process, plus you have to account for possible setbacks. Yeah, it's very possible that he won't come back. But when you look at everything progressing, he's progressing very nicely. He's out there. I know you were busting Sam's balls about him dribbling and shooting. He's not getting up off the ground, but he's still out there traveling with the team and taking shots and doing the dribbles and doing all that stuff. He's still progressing. He's healing well. So there is a very good chance, I think, I believe that there is a good chance that Gordon Hayward could come back in time for the conference finals or maybe even the semifinals. But I think Gordon Hayward in the conference finals, 20 minutes off the bench, is very possible. Very possible. In fact, I personally would, I think it's probable. I'll list it as probable. Corrales listing him as probable for the conference finals. But and the Celtics know, they're going to say what they say, but if the Celtics sit there and say, you know, this kid can, if he's physically ready, that's one thing. He's got to be mentally ready. That's an important thing. If he's not mentally ready, then he might as well not be physically ready. He's got to be mentally ready to go out there and play NBA basketball and not be worried about the foot. So if he's physically ready and mentally ready, then he's ready. And yeah, it's going to take him a while to get that rhythm back. But just him as a spot-up shooter off the bench, that's huge. That's better than any other option that you have. If you have Gordon Hayward parked in the corner, you have to have a defender right on top of him, which changes the entire dynamic. It opens so much more up for Kyrie and Al Horford to play pick and roll. So that, I think, is a distinct possibility. So that's another reason why I don't think the Celtics need to go crazy to go get bench help. I think they have bench help coming.
I mean, first of all, it is possible he comes back. Absolutely. If he does come back, how much does he give you? Is he Paul George when Paul George came back? Because Paul George was no good when he came back. Paul George had nothing to help the Indiana Pacers when he came back. It wasn't until the following season that he started to look like himself again. Can Gordon Hayward hold up if he comes back against LeBron James? Can he hold up if he comes back and they reach the finals against Kevin Durant? Can he hold up in key moments against players that have been healthy and aren't just coming back from serious, serious injury? I don't know if you can rely on him to give you anything this season. I would err toward not relying on him giving anything, even if he comes back. I don't think he'll be particularly productive. And maybe it's the case where you couldn't get somebody better than what he'll be when he comes back. But he's definitely not going to look like an all-star when he gets back.
No, of course not. But what would you rather have? Would you rather have Gordon Hayward, spot-up shooter out there who can handle the ball a little bit and make some nice passes? Or would you rather have Shane Larkin?
I mean, of course.
Exactly. Well, that's my point.
Of course.
I'm not asking for an all-star.
Okay. Back to my question, though. What would it take for you to want them to go out and get some help?
Another injury. That's what it would take. Another guy, like Marcus Smart, done for the season. And okay. Like, all right. Like that.
Let's say Gordon Hayward comes back next year. And they're fully healthy, and they're in a similar situation where they're at the top of the East, but they need rebounding help or they need scoring help. Would you go after somebody then?
I'm not – like, if they want to use the DPE and go after a guy in the trade market or the buyout market, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Yes, help the team. I don't want to be trading picks away for guys that are gone after this year. Because then you start depleting. I know the Celtics still have a ton of picks, but you never know who those picks are going to turn into, or maybe you could package them into something bigger in the offseason. Just don't know. I just don't think that packaging picks, and especially first-rounders, to get a little bit of help this summer, or I mean this season, is – I don't think that makes sense. I just don't think. If they want to use the disabled player exception, I'm 100% on board. I'm 100% on board for that. I'm not really on board, except for the furthest I'll go is like a future second round pick. That's it.
All right. Corrales. Conservative Corrales.
Yeah. I just think that those things, I think those could be better used in the future. And like I said, you're right that it's not just the draft where you can get cheap talent, but that's a good place to go get it. And you just, I look at what the Celtics have, and Hayward coming back, whether it's this season or next season, are they, whatever help they get, who are the Celtics getting? They're going to get them really honestly past the Warriors. Are they really honestly going to get past the Warriors this year? I mean, they beat them once at home, and they played them tough last night. Are they still going to be like seven games? Are they going to, can they beat the Warriors four times in seven games? I see how close they are. I just don't think selling out right now to go for it, like right now, I just don't think they need to go for it like that. I don't think they need to sell out and trade everything to go for it right now. It runs counter to everything that Danny Ainge has done. They've got pieces now. Let's give Tatum that finals experience. Let's give Ojale that finals experience. Jaylen Brown, let's give those guys that little taste. Let's see what they can do under that spotlight and give them that experience. I'd rather have these guys have that experience, and that, because I know it's not easy to go back to the finals all the time, but you're getting Hayward back. Even if they don't get him back this year, you get him back next year as himself. Now you're adding an all-star to this team, a potential finals team. You're adding an all-star. Like, that's big. I think I'd rather just have these guys just roll with these guys and just go. With, you know, and like I said, with the DPE, maybe a little extra help, fine. But I'm ready to roll with these guys.
While we're on the topic, I'm very excited to see the Celtics with Gordon Hayward. They are just going to be a powerhouse. And I would love to see the matchup against the Golden State Warriors when Hayward is healthy, and Kyrie versus Steph, and Hayward and Tatum and Brown against Durant and Klay Thompson. And that would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. So
you think about a third year Jaylen Brown, a second year Jason Tatum as your two worst players on the floor, because you've got Kyrie, Hayward, and Horford. Just that's crazy. You throw that lineup out there, holy shit. I mean, switchability, everything, length all over the place. God, that's a good team. That's an amazing team.
It should be fun.
Okay. Any other takes from last night's game and all of this stuff?
I got no takes.
You got no takes.
I kind of appreciated Stephen Curry doing the Nick Young premature celebration on a miss.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was entertaining.
Oops.
What else did I enjoyed Marcus Morris just doing his own thing, just kind of shooting shots out there. He shoots his shots.
He definitely shoots his shots.
And what else?
Everybody else's shots too.
Yeah, a lot of shots. Shane Larkin roasting Draymond Green was unexpected but cool. it was an entertaining game. That was probably the second most entertaining game to me. I think the Spurs game that they had where Kyrie missed a three right near the buzzer was the best played game played all season. But the Warriors-Celtics might have been second.
Yeah, it was a good game. Hell of a game. I want to give a shout out to Terry Rozier, who's thirsty for Zendaya on Twitter. I just think it's hilarious to see him tweet out, "I'm retweeting everything Zendaya puts up. I don't care. It's all over." It's all over.
Talk about Terry Rozier back on Twitter is
it's the best.
It's could be a little wild.
Yeah.
Could get real wild.
It could get real wild. And look, yeah, he's shooting a shot for Zendaya. You little 20-something-year-old kids, you go do your thing.
Who is Zendaya, man?
She's like this little pop star. Yeah, she's like this 21-year-old pop star. She's
okay.
Yeah, she's like a Disney Channel, you know, whatever. She's like another Miley Cyrus or something. I had to look that up. I had to look that up. I'm on her Wikipedia.
I don't think you had to look that up.
No,
that
I did. Was... I had to. In fact, I made sure that I said that with such conviction that I had to make sure that everybody knows that I did not know that before this. I have her Wikipedia page up right here, and that's, you know, I just wanted to make sure. I was going to try and play it off like I knew, and then I'm like, oh, I sound too convincing. I don't want to sound gross. That's too gross.
I think you knew all about Zendaya. You've probably been retweeting Zendaya from one of your burner accounts for a long time.
I am Terry Rozier's burner account. All right, that's the show, everybody. I want to again remind you to help your community. If you're trying to buy a new house or sell your house, go through Jason Manganiello. Again, Celtics fan, big-time Celtics fan. He's always interacting with us on Twitter during games. Podcast listener, and by the way, the best damn real estate agent around. And what part of what makes him so good is that he donates 10% of his commission to a local nonprofit. So he makes sure that he helps enrich the community that you're in. So contact Jason to buy or sell a house or just get a market analysis, 617-877-5694, or email him at lockedonjason@gmail.com. I want to thank you for listening. Again, if you are not a subscriber, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, everywhere. Google Play, iTunes, or whatever, Apple Podcasts now, I don't know, and Spotify, we're there. If you are a subscriber, 5-star rating, please, good review, please, and share. Spread the word. Let them know that you have been listening to this awesome podcast, and these people are missing out if they're not listening to us. We're the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.